Microbe Talk, the podcast from the Microbiology Society. When most people hear the word fungi, they probably think of mushrooms. But fungi are a varied group, consisting of mushrooms, molds, and yeast. Once considered to be plants, fungi are actually their very own taxonomic kingdom. Many of them are harmless, some are even helpful, but others can be deadly. In recent weeks, the World Health Organization has warned of the serious threat that fungal pathogens pose to humans. And you might have been seeing more in the media about the dangers of fungal infections. I'm Charlotte, and in this episode of Microbe Talk, I'm taking a look inside the creeping threat of fungal infections. To find out more about fungal pathogens, I began by speaking to Professor Kevin Kavanagh, a professor of microbiology at Maynooth University in Ireland. To begin with, how serious is the threat of fungal infections?
Fungal pathogens represent a serious threat to the health of immunocompromised patients. So, for example, transplant patients, patients with underlying cancer, or, for example, cystic fibrosis patients. And in the developed world, they cause significant illness and death. However, in recent years, we have begun to recognise the importance of fungal pathogens in the developing world, where often fungal pathogens attack healthy individuals, cause devastating disease and death. So yes, they are very significant pathogens, both in the developed world and the developing world.
But then when we think about infections, most public health messaging tends to focus on bacteria and viruses. So why are fungal pathogens so overlooked?
That's a very good point. Partially because in our part of the world, those who got fungal infections were generally ill with some other condition. They may have been immunocompromised or with some underlying illness. So it was seen almost as a niche difficulty. And then the other point is that in many cases, we've not looked for the pathogens. And this is certainly the case in the developing world, where due to the pioneering work of Professor David Denning in recent years, we've begun to get an appreciation of actually the burden of fungal infection in many countries, where previously people didn't look for them, but they were actually there the whole time causing disease and infection. So I suppose we haven't been as conscious of fungal pathogens simply because we haven't looked for them.
That might all be about to change, as the World Health Organization has recently published a report warning that cases of fungal infections are a growing concern. The report included a list of 19 priority fungal pathogens intended to guide research, funding, and public health action. Four of these were identified as critical priority. So to find out more, I spoke to Professor Neil Gow, Deputy Vice Chancellor and Professor at the University of Exeter, and a previous president of the Microbiology Society.
Yes, so the four critical pathogens are Aspergillus fumigatus, Cryptococcus neoformans, and then two species of Candida, Candida albicans and Candida auris. And they're all quite different in the reasons why they have appeared on the critical list. We'll start with Aspergillus fumigatus. This is a mould, a green sporulating mould, which is very common in things like compost heaps. It's an environmental organism, but it can also cause a very severe set of diseases, not just one type of disease, but multiple diseases in patients. And one of the real concerns about Aspergillus is that it's because it's an environmental organism, it's often being exposed to environmental stresses, which include the agricultural use of fungicides of a same class, which are used to treat patients. And as a consequence, what we're seeing year on year is a rise in the number of strains of Aspergillus fumigatus, which are azole resistant. And that's means that this is the major class of antifungal drugs which are used to treat patients with fungal infections. The second one which they highlight is Cryptococcus neoformans. And Cryptococcus is a yeast which is unusual for fungal infections. It's got a capsule around about it. And it causes meningitis, so it gets into the central nervous system, and that's where it causes its major burden of disease. It's particularly prevalent in sub-Saharan African countries, and it's prevalent often in people who've got HIV, for example, and other diseases. So it's often associated with what we call co-infections. And then the next one is the organism that I spend most of my time researching on, Candida albicans. Candida albicans is a very important organism, causes a series of diseases. In women, it's a well-known cause of vaginitis. More than 100 million women will suffer from recurrent vaginitis each year, more than 4 episodes each year. A very miserable sentence. But about a couple of 100,000, maybe more than a quarter of a million people die from invasive disease under particular circumstances, not usually in healthy individuals at all, but for those people who've got either had various forms of trauma or immunosuppression, this can be a very serious disease. The last one of the four was Candida auris. This is a very curious organism indeed. It's not a very close relative of Candida albicans, but it is in the Candida group. What's curious about Candida auris is it was really only first recognised clinically as a problem about 2009, and it's named auris because it was isolated as an ear infection, auris for ear. And then after 2009, it appeared in 4 different continents. And you might think, that's a pandemic spread, but that is not the case with auris. When it arose in these different continents, these were very genetically diverse strains, completely unrelated to one another. So what that means is it rose independently in 4 different parts of the world and now is spread very widely. And very worryingly for auris is it has 2 very difficult properties. One is it's very difficult to get rid of in hospital settings. It seems to be very persistent on bedding, on surfaces, etc. And the second thing is it's an organism which is very commonly drug resistant, sometimes drug resistant to multiple classes of the antifungals that we have. And we've only got 4 major classes. And so it's a multi-drug resistant organism. So when it does appear as an outbreak, it can be very difficult to treat. So those are the 4 that WHO have highlighted.
So the World Health Organization have been publishing lists of priority viral and bacterial pathogens for years, but this is the first list of priority fungal pathogens. So why now?
First of all, it's extremely helpful that it does happen now. I think our previous conversation highlights that, you know, fungal infections are not rare at all. They're very common. In fact, one study has reported recently looking at it burdens, then something in the region of 5 billion people have been infected with serious infections since 2013, so over a period of 9 years. Very large number. But one of the things which is true to say is that many of the diseases, these diseases we've talked about, are either recent, like auris, or they have increased in severity and increased in how common they are in relatively recent times. So there's been an important job to be done by advocates in this field to point out that this is a rising tide of clinically important infections. So very important work done by many important advocates. Actually, overall, our data suggests, and surveys carried out by the MRC Centre, that roughly only 2 to 3% of infectious disease budgets around the world, America, Europe, UK, are devoted to studies of fungal infections. So it's a very important and very prevalent healthcare problem being dealt with by a relatively small number of people with specialist training in the area.
One of the things in the World Health Organization's report that they mentioned about why fungal pathogens are becoming more of a problem is climate change. So how does climate change increase the risk of fungal infections?
Well, probably in multiple ways. So climate change is causing increased burdens of fungal crop diseases, and fungicides are driving resistance in Aspergillus. But there are also a possibility that climate change is causing organisms to undergo potential species jump. For example, Candida auris has been proposed as a potential consequence of climate change. So the idea would be that we are seeing an increasing number of summers in which there are very hot spells, and organisms are having to adapt to periods of drought and hot weather. Some of those therefore increase the temperatures in which they are comfortable in working with, and that as the temperature optimum for a fungus increases and becomes closer to 37 degrees, then you see the ability of organisms to colonize and potentially infect humans whose blood temperature is around that temperature. So this is a hypothesis. We certainly see changes in the burden and the types of organisms causing various diseases of plants and animals and humans. And it's quite possible that this is being driven by changes in weather and climate.
Another reason that fungi have been in the news over the past couple of years is the increase in invasive fungal infections in hospitalised patients during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yes, COVID and fungal infections are a very important component of research just now. We've certainly seen increased numbers of infections in the COVID background, both for Aspergillus, for we see the spread of Candida auris during the COVID pandemic. We've seen a rise in the number of invasive diseases caused by Candida albicans, and we've seen also the rise of COVID-associated diseases due to what was previously quite a rare fungus called mucor, the disease called mucormycosis. So I guess in the background here, we have patients who are already vulnerable. They might be in a hospital setting or in an intensive care unit. So COVID-associated pulmonary aspergillosis is one of those examples where previously we saw that disease only in patients with severely weakened immune systems. However, what we're seeing during COVID is increasing report of aspergillosis in patients who do not have weakened immune systems but have got severe respiratory complications due to COVID. And this has now got a terminology. It's called CAPA, for COVID-19 associated pulmonary aspergillosis, CAPA. And there's a similarly for those who are, we see an association of infection with COVID, and people who are getting candidemia, which are bloodstream infections due to Candida. So the acute risk factors which are associated with COVID care, and things which other medicines which suppress immunity, you're seeing a consequential rise in infections. And the other one I wanted just to mention, which is a complicated disease, but actually a really, really difficult disease, a dreadful disease actually, is mucormycosis, which is quite rare still in the UK. It was extremely rare. It's been called a slight misnomer, black fungus infection, and it's particularly been highlighted in India, where the numbers of cases have increased by more than tenfold. It really very high burdens now. Now, mucor causes necrotizing disease, which is horrible. So it causes massive tissue destruction. And COVID was something which has elevated the numbers of mucor infections, particularly in India, because you've got a background also of uncontrolled diabetes, which is another setting which mucor diseases tend to prevail. So we see a whole series of things where the COVID plus fungus is really problematic.
So we've talked about pandemics, we've talked about the COVID pandemic, and we've talked about Candida auris and how it seemed like pandemic spread, but it probably wasn't. Could a fungal pathogen cause a new pandemic?
Well, in the past, we have felt that that would be less likely than pandemics due to viruses, which are very highly transmissible. Most of the fungal infections that we have do not transfer patient to patient with the same sorts of efficiencies that we see for viral infections. So it is possible, but it requires direct contact for some of the diseases. But what you do see is you see a sort of, as I've said before, a rising tide of fungal infections, which reflect a whole series of environmental things or clinical changes, which make our population more susceptible to disease. So what you see is something which might resemble a pandemic, but it's not due to the same kind of methodology of patient-to-patient spread, but increasing circumstance in which you see the flourishing of fungal infections.
One factor that we've already touched on that allows fungal infections to flourish is rising drug resistance. Antimicrobial resistance is when microbes evolve to become resistant to drugs which were previously effective against them, making it more difficult to treat infections. It's a serious global challenge, and it can develop in any type of microbe, including fungi. So, Kevin, we hear a lot about antibiotic resistance in bacteria, but then how does antifungal resistance in fungi compare as a threat?
Fungi do show resistance to many of the azole drugs that are used to treat them, particularly yeast of the Candida genus. So the continued use, and in some cases the overuse of antifungal agents, has certainly led to the development of resistance, and that is becoming a problem.
So when we talk about inappropriate use, is that usually in a healthcare setting, or is it also in other settings like agriculture, for example, where we might be treating plant diseases?
Yeah, well, certainly in the case of Aspergillus fumigatus, the use of triazole fungicides in agriculture has led to the development of resistance, and then this has crossed into the patient. The other point is that as in many cases, people with underlying diseases can be kept alive longer. Therefore, they're being exposed to azole drugs on a longer basis, and this may contribute to resistance. So certainly the consensus is that resistance will become and is becoming a major problem as we move forward.
So you've mentioned some of the antifungal drugs that we currently have available, but there aren't many, right?
At the moment, there are four distinct classes of antifungal drugs, which is a very small number. So up until the early 2000s, there were only three classes of antifungal drugs. And then in the early 2000s, the echinocandins were introduced, being the fourth group. So it's a really poor range of antifungal agents to choose from for the clinician. We would hope in the future that, you know, novel antifungal agents could be developed, or maybe antifungal vaccines might be an option to control infection.
So we know that we need more antifungal drugs, but what are some of the challenges that researchers are facing in developing new antifungals?
The main challenge is the fact that fungi are eukaryotic organisms, as we are ourselves. So in many cases, the targets that we might go after in the fungal cell are very similar to structures in human cells. So it's difficult to distinguish or to discern a particular effect. So that's one challenge, which we don't encounter when we're dealing with the development of antibiotics, for example. We need to target structures in the fungal cell that are somewhat unique, such as the cell wall or the ergosterol biosynthetic pathway, for example. But because ergosterol, for example, is very similar structurally to cholesterol in our own bodies, there are often very serious side effects, for example, from the use of amphotericin B, which is an important antifungal drug. The other thing to think about, apart from these side effects, is the toxicity, is to be able to identify a compound that is suitably antifungal, but would not require a high dose or prolonged therapy to reach efficacy. So they're all parts of the problem of developing new antifungals.
And finally, do you feel optimistic that the World Health Organization's recent report will bring more attention and research funding to fungal pathogens?
Yes, I do. It will focus the minds of researchers and funding bodies, for sure. But it will also help those who work on fungal pathogens in the developing world, where many are of the fungi are regarded as neglected tropical diseases. And I'm thinking in particular of the causative agent of U. mycotoma, a fungus called Madurella, which is people come into contact with when they step on a thorn, for example, and it causes massive deformation of their feet and legs and so on. An almost neglected pathogen, but now people working in the area can show this and say, look, this is a priority pathogen. We need to deal with it. It's causing huge illness and deformation in large numbers of people in the developing world. Now we have the proof in this document. So I think it will channel funding to areas which have been neglected up to this.
I'm very pleased and optimistic indeed that the WHO have recognised this important. This has been a missing thing which has probably made it more difficult to encourage investment in this area. I think the research councils are increasingly aware of this, and in fact some of them are very solicitous to encourage basic and applied research in medical mycology, and we've seen responses from the MRC and Wellcome here and the NIH within the US in these areas. Also, it's proven to be a very exciting area of research. There's been the quality of research in this area has been extremely interesting, because I do hope that this will have the effect of drawing people who are thinking about doing undergraduate programs and then PhDs to think about working in this area. There are some very exciting programs, highly competitive research programs in this area, and there's a lot to be done. So for people who want to make a difference, I would want to leave with that sort of evangelical note that this is a great area to think about. So now overall, we're talking about 1.5 million deaths a year due to fungal infection and over a billion people infected with fungi. Now, fungal infections now eclipse things like diseases which are much more known and have much bigger research communities like malaria by more than a factor of two, and actually eclipse many human cancers in annual deaths, breast cancer, prostate cancer. These are facts which are not really well known, but it does draw attention to the importance of investing in this area.
Thank you for listening to Microbe Talk. We love to hear your feedback, so please do leave us a comment wherever you're listening. And if you're interested in appearing on a future episode, please get in touch. There's details on our website.